Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have got, a motivational, inspirational, and insightful guest that we're going to be sharing the airwaves with today. Dennis D. Adams is a man who decided that he was going to not only walk the walk of life, but he also wanted to print the talk that went with the walk, so that people could have a guideline about how to work well with communication. His book is titled Honest, Direct, Respectful. Three simple words that will change your life. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and what a great introduction that was. Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. Well, this is your passion. I mean, you really have been dedicated to improving people's lives, and I want my audience to know a little bit about you. You love problems. Most of us are going to say, ooh, yuck, who needs them? But you're a man that you say, no, I really want to go after them. You're challenged by them.
I'm a glutton for punishment.
Yes,
I guess. That's just the way I grew up, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think there are some of us that just take joy in being problem solvers and others that are not. Now, you've done a number of different lines of work, everything from church ministry up to healthcare industry. You are a licensed marriage and family therapist. You've worked as a counselor, consultant, manager, and mediator. You also have done a number of workshops and seminars. Your book really pushed my buttons, and I'll tell you why.
Good.
And it's not in a negative way.
Good.
I thought, I've got to have you on the air. In fact, I was just in Portland, Oregon for a business convention, and while I was there, and I shared this with my audience just a couple of days ago, while I was there, there was myself and two other individuals that we went out to lunch together. And while we're there, we're in a restaurant, and we encounter this group of young people. They were in their late teens, I'd say anywhere from 17 to 20. And they were being very, very rude. They wouldn't take any kind of, positioning of respect for the management of the restaurant.
Uh-huh.
And finally, I spoke up. I just all of a sudden got out of the booth, turned around and talked to them, and they all sort of went real, real quiet. And it was interesting to see the different responses of the young people. The girls seemed to respond with, oh, I'm really sorry, this is terrible. A couple of the young men, it was like, we're going to challenge, and then they got poked in the ribs by an associate sitting at the table with them, like, shut up, this isn't what you do.
You're right.
And I realized that this was a group of young people that somehow or another either were testing the boundaries, and a couple of them were really not in any way, in any manner, concerned about anyone else. Now, I challenged them, and the interesting thing was that there was one young person that came back to me after they finally left, and they were loud and noisy, and they were doing this on purpose, especially two of the males. And one young man came back, and he said, excuse me, I want to apologize for all my friends. And I looked at this young man, and I went, whoa! This is someone, not only does he have self-respect, but he is taking a positioning of being gracious and saying, it was inappropriate the way this group was acting. I want to apologize for them, and I want you to know how sorry I am
Great. That
you were not treated with respect. And I thought, now this is a significant person. You encounter this kind of garbage all the time.
Well, I do, and a lot of what I wrote in the book is really my own struggle with that whole communication piece.
Mm-hmm.
Because I spent a lot of years as a very passive person.
Ah,
and if you look at it in relationship to honest, direct, and respectful, I wasn't honest because I was afraid of people not liking me or I would hurt their feelings. I wasn't direct for the same reason, but I was very respectful. I knew how to act in a respectful way.
Mm-hmm.
Then I spent a few years as that reactive person, actually what I call a top in the book, a ticked off passive. mm-hmm. but it looked reactive. And the reactive person is usually very honest, very direct, but not always respectful. And it was trying to find that middle place and realizing that I couldn't control other people and I didn't want to manipulate other people, but I wanted to really come from a place of strength and not necessarily confront people like I heard a lot of talk in the assertiveness classes that I had taken. So I have found it to be a life-changing experience in my own life, and people report to me the same thing.
Honest, direct, and respectful. This is something that at one time within a cultural environment, you had boundaries. And in our world today, because of an international positioning that we have today that was unlike, let's say, 40 or 50 years ago, then we've got different situations that we come into. But I think being honest, being direct, and being respectful is appropriate no matter what culture you belong to.
I agree with you.
And so you said one of your epiphanies. Now, let me ask, before I get into that, I want to ask you, with the situation that I encountered, what would you have done? How would you have interacted with that? Of course,
being a male,
confronting the male is something different than
a female.
Well,
actually, because you know the male ego is pretty fragile, you know. But could I share an example that I had very similar?
Oh, please do.
I was speaking to a pharmacy convention. There were about 300 people there, and about 290 of them were really excited about the topic I was talking about, stress. And, you know, they were really excited about it. I could see them responding with their eyes and their body language. But there were 10 people in the back of the room, and they were talking. And so I decided to take a low-level approach first to deal with the situation. So I paused, and I looked at them, folded my hands in front of me, and a number of other people sort of caught on in the audience, and they turned around and looked at them. And so they got quiet, and I thought, okay, well, that was a win-win. And when I started to speak again, they not only started talking again, but they got louder. So by the time I left, I was really frustrated and upset. And because I'm a passive person, I couldn't really, by nature, because I tend to be overly concerned with what people think, I couldn't enjoy the fact that 290 of them really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I was really focused on that 10, you know. And so I started to walk on. I thought, you know, I really have to practice what I preach here. So I thought, well, I'll go to the director and tell him I'll never speak to his group again. And then I looked at the check I just got, and I thought, that'd be stupid. So I put the check back in my pocket, and I, with a lot of fear and trepidation, I walked back into that room, and I began to walk back to that table. And I got to tell you, my heart was beating 1,000 miles an hour. And I thought people could actually see it and hear it. It was beating so hard. But I walked back there, and I had a similar response that you had. I said, can I talk to you folks? And they said, sure. And when I began to speak to them, I simply said this. This is what I said to the group of people. I said, you know, when I was speaking tonight and you folks were talking, it was really distracting. And when I paused and I looked at you and you continued to talk and even got louder, then I was really frustrated and upset. And I truly hope you don't treat another speaker the way you treated me tonight. And I walked out. And every time I share that story, the passive people in the room, in the audience, raise their hand and say, what did they do? And I said, it didn't matter what they did. You see, as a passive person, that's how I gauged whether I was successful or not. As an honest, direct, respectful person and trying to live in that place, I either sink or swim based on how honest and how direct and how respectful. And I knew that I had done it.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked out and I felt total relief. Now, three people took the effort to find my phone number and call me and apologize the next day, which was a wonderful thing. But It was a similar situation, so I think that I had to find a way to create phrases, sentences, paragraphs to share with people that really got to the heart of what they were doing, how their behavior affected me, and what I wished or wondered they would do, and to find a way to share that with them, and then stop at the end of it and not try to orchestrate the end of the conversation,
mm-hmm.
and try to make everything okay. It either is going to open up the dialogue or it's going to close it, but it doesn't matter if I've been honest, direct, and respectful. I've been able to let it go.
I think that's a wonderful example, because what you did was you made it okay, just sort of like I did. I did what I did a little differently. I didn't turn around and try to, you know, make an extensive deal out of what I had expressed. I had expressed myself clearly and succinctly,
mm-hmm.
and it was up to them. So then I got a feedback afterwards, which really made me feel good. It just,
yes,
even
it
if
does.
It was just the one,
sure.
it made me feel very good. And you did it in your way, and I think that that is really good because there may have been those seven that just were like spoiled children saying, well, guess who he thinks he is or whatever, but who cares?
Well, and that's really the point.
Yeah, you had 193 people that said, this is good. I'm glad you were here. So who gives a hoot about the seventh?
Well, and that's one of the ways that a passive person has to remind themselves to be able to move to the middle, because actually reactive folks who tend to be very honest and very direct but not respectful. So if I'd have gone back there as a reactive person and said, you're the rudest group I've ever met, and I can't believe you did this, and I'm going to unload on you so I'll feel better. First of all, I probably wouldn't have felt better, and secondly, they're not going to hear what I'm saying because they're going to focus on my delivery and what
mm-hmm.
My actions. So I think the important thing is, but what I was going to say is that reactive people actually come to the middle sooner. Many times reactive people will come up to me after a seminar and say, man, I really like that, and you know, I'm already honest and direct, and all I have to do is be respectful. And I say, well, the first way you can do that is lower your intensity.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way you're talking right now is very intense, and it puts off people. And they say, really, I never thought about that before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I help them to lower their intensity and find a way to say it in their honest, they don't have problems with that, direct, but learn how to be respectful by watching respectful people.
I think that's very, very good. Now, let's go into a little bit of what you define as a passive person, as a reactive person.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all have a little bit of one or the other, and I would say in many respects I was more of a passive individual. And I know there's some people that are going to say, Donna, give me a break, you're not so passive. But really, for most of my life, there was a great deal of that patterning.
Yeah.
I hate confrontation.
No, I believe that.
Passion, I hate them.
Well, if you look at a passive person by nature, and I really think it is by nature, I have five brothers, and, you know, three of us are passive and two of them are reactive, and you can really tell the difference. And I think that, you know, a passive person sort of thinks like this: I feel bad, I don't like to feel bad, I don't want you to know I feel bad, I don't like conflict, I don't want to rock the boat, therefore I won't tell you what I really feel or think. And so we try to use our respect as a way to try to manipulate the situation, which I hated that when people would say, Dennis, you're manipulative, and I'd say, I'm not. But I was, because I couldn't be as direct as I needed to be to resolve the issue. And reactive people sort of think like this: I feel bad, I paid for this bad feeling, and I think I'll take a couple people down with me. And so the attitude of the reactive person is, I'm not going to feel bad alone, and I'm going to take you with me. And so those are the two extremes, and I see HDR in the middle, the honest, direct, respectful.
Mm-hmm.
But I do see a third alternative, and that is the top, the ticked-off passive, who basically has been passive most of their life, and they don't see the honest, direct, respectful middle place. So they go to where the only thing they see is the other side, and that is, you know, being honest and direct and, you know, dropping the respect, and because they're ticked off. And I first noticed that when I was at an assertiveness class, and I told one of my friends, I said, a top's leading that. And he said, what? And I said, a top, a ticked-off passive. He was a passive person who had spent most of his life as passive and now was going to teach us how to confront and tell people off. And that's not what I wanted to know how to do. I wanted to learn how to come from a place of strength and be a truth teller without necessarily being confrontive. Because I realized that confrontation really may have made the confronter feel a little better, but it didn't resolve the issue, or didn't at least open the door to resolve the issue.
One of the points I think that's very significant about your book, Honest, Direct, and Respectful, is this is something we need to learn.
Mm-hmm.
When we're growing up, we may or may not have the best of examples. As we come into our 20s, we then are trying to figure out who we are, and
exactly.
God bless us, because most of us, even when we're 95, still haven't figured that one out.
That's right.
But what we try to do is find our comfort zone.
Right.
And so we look around, and we feel like we've got to mimic a whole bunch of people, and then we discover we don't like what we're mimicking, and maybe
right.
it's not appropriate. Maybe the images, like some of the public figures, whether they're in sports or entertainment or politics or whatever, maybe they're not really what we want to copy. So learning to become our own person is one of the greatest challenges that we've faced. And I think that when we can be honest and direct and respectful for ourselves and with ourselves, wow, that's a big step. And that's why I think your book is such a handy book. And, wow, what a great gift to give to someone that's going to school or a person that's going through challenges, because it really can give them a good insight into themselves.
It made a huge difference in my life. And I will tell you, though, that even though on the my nature was to be passive, if you were to ask my children when they were younger, was Dad passive or reactive, they would have said he's reactive because they got the brunt of all that unresolved stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point I had to go back to them and say, this is why this happened, because
mm-hmm.
I didn't deal with this in real time. In real situations, and so I brought them home and I took it out on you. That's not an excuse. It's an explanation. But let me tell you how I was able to change it and how I got out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it made sense to them. They know about honest, direct, respectful now. They know the differences. I have a daughter that's respectful. I mean, that's reactive by nature, and a son who's passive by nature. And you can see that dynamic and how difficult it has been for them to sort of gravitate to that middle place.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't see it practice a lot. I think there's one other caveat that's important, and that is that I think there are times to be passive and reactive. And let me give you an example. I have six grandchildren, and if I was reactive all the time with my grandchildren and, you know, always had this intensity, and then one day they were running out in the street and I came at that same level of reactivity, they wouldn't hear me because they'd say, well, Grandpa, that's just the way Grandpa is.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm honest, direct, respectful most of the time with them, in my communications, treating them like human beings, respecting them, and then the one time they're running out in front of a car, I react. They say, this is different. Grandpa doesn't do this. There must be something wrong. So I think there is a time to react, but it's very measured. And there are times when it's okay to be passive. I've had conversations with my children before where I said, as they grew up and became adults, I said, I have a thought about what you're doing and the decision you're making. Would you like to hear it? And they said no. And I say, okay, that's fine. You know, if at some point you are, I'd love to share it with you. But, you know, I don't force myself on them, and I go to that passive place, which is really a respectful thing to do. So I think there are times, but I think what we don't see modeled, we see people that are passive, we see people that are reactive. Most of the time we have one parent that's one way and one the other way,
mm-hmm.
But we don't see that middle place.
And I think that's very important because it takes a willingness to be present with where you are in the moment.
Absolutely.
Right then and there. And you have to sort of take a deep breath.
Right.
You have to say, okay, I'm going to think about how I'm going to respond. This isn't a life or death situation. I may be feeling like it's like that at this moment, but
right.
It's not really. How am I going to work with this? And thinking it through. You say in your observation as a professional person having been in many years of clinical practice that about 80% of the population is passive and 20% is reactive. When I read that in your book, I had the thought that's one of the reasons why when you have a youngster or young adult like I experienced or others that are of the reactive dispositioning on any level, it sort of mm-hmm. takes us aback.
Because it does.
We go, where? What planet is this person from?
And they're not being used to being called on because 80% of the passive people probably aren't going to tell them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to try to manipulate them. They're going to try to... Well, the other thing is that they actually become the focus of the problem, and I think the focus many times is the passive people. I was up in Canada doing a workshop, and I had a large group of social workers the first day and the second day. I had 25 of their managers, and they came in the room, and I said, I want all the passive managers on one side and all the reactive, and I kind of watched them divide up. It was really interesting how they divided up, but it was about 80-20, although on the reactive side was a person who had told me the day before that she was passive and she thought I was talking about her and someone had told me about her. And so I looked at her and I said, I'm really confused because yesterday you said you were passive, you're on the reactive side. She says, well, there weren't that many reactives and I kind of felt bad for them. And everybody started to laugh. And so she went back over to the passive side. But I asked the reactive managers, I said, would you like to say something to the passive managers? And, of course, they said, yes, we would. And they put it right out there. They said, why don't you come to us? Why don't you put it on the table? Why don't you just say it like it is? And they, you know, they laid it out step by step. And when I came to the passive managers, I said, would you like to say something to them, to the reactive managers? And they said, yes, we would. And what they did was so enlightening. They actually turned to each other and start talking about the past or the reactive managers, not to them.
Mm-hmm.
So what I say is passive people talk about people, not to them. And, of course, the more they said things like, why can't they just be nice? Why do they have to be so angry? Why can't they be like us? The more angry the reactive managers became.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was able to do with that company was to help them come to that middle place as a staff and work through issues rather than polarize around issues. And the reactive folks came to me later and said, you know, we were always the bad guys. But we weren't really, you know, we have some fault in the breakdown of communication, but a lot of it actually was the passive folks who weren't willing to deal with people in an honest, direct, and respectful way because of their fear.
Ah, big four-letter word, fear.
Right.
Big four-letter word. And especially in a working environment.
Absolutely.
Because the instinctive response is, wow, you're doing my paycheck.
Exactly.
So if I say something to you and you're a reactive person, you're jumping down my throat and letting all hell break loose.
Right.
And I'm sitting there and I'm saying, I'm going to talk to you. You've got to be kidding.
Right.
So I find it fascinating where the reactive said, well, it's the passive person's fault, when it's really a level of trust. More
exactly.
Than anything
it's a level
else.
Of trust. That's exactly it.
If you don't have that trust, how are you going to have that open communication? So maybe some of these people that are in the positions of management, and I know of a young woman who was fired from a positioning because the top manager was a very reactive personality, and it was like her way or the highway.
Right.
And then there was another manager that didn't want to go the highway route, so was very passive and a yes person and wouldn't support this subordinate,
mm-hmm.
and the subordinate ended up being tossed out the front door, so to speak.
This is what happens, and the problem isn't resolved.
What is it here? Isn't there a problem with communication? Because she was seeing some things that needed to be resolved, and she was trying to be that HDR person, honest, direct, and respectful, and it was falling on deaf ears, both with a passive person in management as well as a
reactive person
in management.
No, I think that, and I do a lot of management and personal executive consulting around these issues with folks, and I think that's why you have to redefine how you know you've been successful. What I tell people is you've been successful if you've been honest, direct, respectful, not if they respond well, not if they, you know, not if they change their mind or do what you think they ought to do. You're successful as you become and can share with people in this honest, direct, respectful way. Over time, it will change folks,
mm-hmm.
But it may not change them at that very moment. Remember, I was managing the psychiatry department for about 5.5 years, and I walked in one day to our appointment center, and one of the doctors was really angry and sort of using my name in vain. And I said, would you like to go back to my office and discuss this? She said, no, I wouldn't. And I said, have you already made up your mind about why we made this decision and how it was made, or would you like some additional information? And, of course, it sort of took her off guard, and she says, well, okay, I want some additional information. And I began to share it with her, and as I did, she got angry and got in my face again, and I said, you know, I'm really confused right now because a minute ago you said you wanted some additional information, and now you've stopped me and are in my face. And she says, I don't want to hear. And so I walked back to my office, and every part of me wanted to defend myself, but I didn't do it. And later that day, the ladies in the appointment center came back and said, we really admired the way you handled that. Even though it wasn't resolved at that point, they said, you really came across looking like more of an adult and more in control. And the next day, the doctor came by, and we were able to talk about it more rationally and discuss it and come to a decision, a resolution about it. But the point is that I had to let go of saying, I'm successful if I change her mind. I'm successful if she doesn't yell at me. No, I'm successful if I practice being honest, direct, and respectful. And know when it's time to stop and go to the passive place and let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the key, I think. And it's that consistency over time that can change in that a department, a family, a relationship. And it's the consistency over time. We were able to really do some great work in that department. And because I challenged the folks there to be honest and direct and respectful in our meetings with one another. And the people that had the hardest time, actually, were not the reactive people. It was the passive people who were afraid to step up to the plate and say mm-hmm. how they really felt.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because of fear.
Because of fear, right.
You have a portion of your book that deals with the personal side, and you relate a story about a man that you were working with. He was your client. And you were talking to him because he had done such a good job about getting his life together. You said, well, now you're getting your life together, you might want to cut your hair. And you were just teasing him.
Because I'm bald, and I was just joking with him, right?
And he just blew up at you, started mm-hmm. yelling obscenities, and, you know, this is out of the blue. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, because of what you understand, you tried to find out what it was, and what happened is that he had a horrific thing happen to him.
He did.
When he was 14 years old. What happened
to him? He did. What happened was we had become really close, and I, you know, since I'm a bald-headed guy and had a ponytail for years, I was just teasing him. But it touched a sensitivity, and what I call a sensitivity in communication is like when you go to the dentist, and the dentist is touching your teeth and it hits that sensitive spot, you don't just say, oh, doctor, by the way, I want you to know you hit that sensitive spot. You react, right?
All right.
Well, that's what he did. And, of course, my first thought is to protect myself. My first thought is fight or flight, to say you can't act like this on the unit. But I stopped myself and I looked at him and I said, and I'll call him Fred. That wasn't his name, but I'll call him Fred. I said, you know, Fred, I don't know what it was I said that caused you so much anger and being so upset. But that wasn't my intention. Can you help me to understand it? And he paused for a long time, and he finally caught his composure, and he looked up at me, and he goes, you know, Dennis, when I was 14 years old, my dad held a gun to my head and made me shave off all my hair.
Mm.
Now, that's the other piece that we need to understand when we start to practice honest, direct, and respectful. And that is, rather than react to people, report to them. I didn't react to his anger. I reported what my intention was and my surprise about his reaction, and he was able to come from a better place and say, Dennis, this is what happened to me. There's no way that if I'd have known he had a sensitivity around that, I would have touched it. But we do it sometimes
not
know it.
Of course. There's a lot of things we just take for granted,
exactly.
And we don't know. We haven't walked in that other person's shoes.
Exactly.
We don't know what they've gone through. It's just like with this gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a million years would you have been able to figure that out.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just one of those things that each and every one of us have various things that happen to it. Your book, Honest, Direct, and Respectful. Is there a website that people can go to find out more about it?
There is. There's a website, www.hdr, like Honest, Direct, Respectful Solutions. So it's hdrsolutions.com. You can actually take the little test I have in the book that tells you if you're passive or reactive, and you can read an excerpt on the webpage also, and you can order the book from the webpage. And one of the things that I will tell your listeners is that I wrote the book very small because I found out a long time ago that if I gave a man a Sports Illustrated to read, they could probably concentrate on it about 3 hours, but if I gave them a book on communication, they could concentrate about 5 minutes. You can actually read this book in 40 minutes. It's succinct, it gets to the point, and men do read it. And that was one of the reasons I made it so short and concise. And I'm working on a second book now called Honest, Direct, Respectful in Your Most Important Relationships.
Well, I'll
really
look forward to receiving a copy of that one.
Yeah.
Dennis D. Adams has been my guest. Go to his website, hdrsolutions.com. Honest, Direct, and Respectful. Dennis, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Donna.
This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be taking a break in just a moment, so don't you go away. We've got a lot of good things to share for you. Again, hdrsolutions.com, Honest, Direct, and Respectful by Dennis D. Adams. A good thing to give to a kid, too.
Absolutely.
Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss, book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. By the way, phone lines are open. If you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would be delighted to do exactly that. Now, here are the toll-free numbers. You can call me on 877-876-5227. That's for the U.S., 877-876-5227. Canadians, it's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. Well, this is going to be one traveling lady this month and next. We're going to be heading down to the San Francisco area where I'm going to be speaking at the Wisdom Festival. Now, the Wisdom Festival is being held at the Fort Mason Center in downtown San Francisco, and you can go to their website, wisdomfestival.com, and you can find out all of the information. So if you have any friends or family in that area of the country, then let them know that I'll be speaking on Saturday the 15th at 7 in the evening at the Wisdom Festival, and my topic is mental ecology. So don't forget, very shortly I'll be in San Francisco doing an appearance at the Wisdom Festival, and that is the 15th and the 16th of September, and you can go to their website and get all of the information. All kinds of people are going to be there. I'll be in booth 113, and you'll be able to meet with me and say hello, but also I'll be available for little mini consultations, and I'll have some of my publications with me as well. Don't forget, you can call in this half hour, coming up 877-876-5227, or Canadians 888-815-9756. And I want to also mention that in the month of October, I am going to be traveling to Southern California. I'll be traveling to Alaska. I also will be traveling to New York City. So if you're located in any or all of those areas, and I know a lot of you travel like I do, so if you're in any of those areas and you want to know how to reach me, just give me a call at my office, which is 800-872-8852. I will be scheduling private appointments with people. I'll be at the National Publicity Summit in New York. I have got some appearances in Southern California and then also in Alaska. I'm going to be up there, so doing private counseling and interacting with different people. So just know you can call me in my office for any details. Go to my website, look up my newsletter. You'll find out information there as well. A lot more detail will be coming up regarding the month of October. Also, I will be attending, I neglected to mention, at the 29th of September, which is a Saturday, I'm going to be a part of the Boeing Parapsychology Expo in Kent, Washington, and I'll have more information to share with you as we get closer to that date. So that will be an all-day event. For those of you who are listening in the Washington area, I'm going to be there as well. What about color in your life? Have you ever thought of working with color? Color is so fascinating. Whenever you talk with an interior designer or you walk into certain environments, color has an effect on you. Green has always been known to be very soothing, dependent on its tone. I became interested in studying the aspect of color, oh, so many years ago, because it has a definite psychological effect on you. I can remember being in someone's home where they had just purchased, if you can believe this, orange-covered, I mean a real vivid orange-covered upholstery on their brand-new living room furniture. I walked into that room, and I thought I was going to go bonkos because it just, to me, was a very unsettling color. Well, that was before I came into the understanding of how color can impact you, how it affects you. My goodness, there's so much research that's been done on this. You'll find many fast food restaurants will use a lot of red. I'll never forget one day when a waitress who had worked at a major chain was talking about how she had learned, she was no longer working for this particular chain of restaurants, and she said, I was made aware by some of the people that were coming in and doing the evaluation for how they were going to remodel the restaurant, how important the color red was. She said, when you use the color red in a restaurant, people tend to eat faster. And part of this chain's business was being able, and it was a nice restaurant. It wasn't, you know, a real fast food type of a restaurant. It was a very nice restaurant. But they used red in the decor because people ate more rapidly. And she said it's just this high energy feel. And whenever you would go into this restaurant, you'd find that the din of noise was also quite loud. So the restaurant had depended on colors having a certain psychological effect so that they could have turnover in their tables. And it's been very, very successful for them. Well, feng shui also utilizes the aspect of color, and I came across some information that I thought you might find interesting. If you're wanting more joy in your life, if you're wanting to have that feel-good type of a sensation, well, Asian decorators like to use yellow. Why? Because the color yellow, a clear yellow, not a brownish, murky yellow, but a clear yellow, brings optimism and happiness into certain areas of the home. And what you might want to do, just to test it on yourself, is using yellow objects. You know, it could be anything like bananas, if you wanted to put it in the kitchen. Anything that's going to bring this type of a feel. I always enjoyed yellow in the kitchen. I can remember entering one friend's home that used wonderful, wonderful tones of yellows and whites, cream tones, in a bedroom. And it was just refreshing to walk into the bedroom. It just made you feel good. Well, she had used shades of yellow, but they weren't dark, murky yellow tones. They were clear. And look at the colors we use when we are dressing babies. We like those clear pastel tones, don't we? So all of this has this kind of an effect on you. And the scientists from research know that when you show clear yellow, it boosts levels of the feel-good brain chemical serotonin, and yellow was always associated with the sun. So it gives us a sense of optimism, and it all, again, it depends a lot on the shades. When you want to have more appreciation, they say think red. Now, again, this is in the feng shui kind of application. Red draws attention, it inspires admiration, and you just, if you use red, like with your serving environment, you're going to find that people are going to be much more attentive to their food. If you want more appreciation for just being you, wear red in your attire. Red is the most noticeable color on the spectrum, so it's where we automatically look first. That's what scientists have found out. Now, what about promotion? Black is the color. Now, for those of you people that have studied color, black, it's like it represents all colors, just like white represents all colors. But black absorbs and white reflects. So in the feng shui, black represents stability and strength, and they say it's the absence of color, but not really. It's not really absent in the true sense, but it is a sense of potential that it evokes. Black is the color, according to scientists that work with color, that's most associated with intelligence. Now stop and think about that for a minute. When people are in business, what are the colors that often they're encouraged to wear? What do you usually see men wearing? Not brown suits very often. It's usually black or navy blue. And I know when I'm in New York, this is something, because they're very much more formal in the business environment back on the East Coast than they are on the West Coast. That's something that you'll notice and you'll see. So just think about that. And if you want a close-knit family, think green. Why? Now, I mentioned green right at the beginning. Well, green is a color of peace and harmony. It's nurturing and promotes supportive energy. If you group plants in rooms where your family gathers, it seems to draw everyone closer. Now, scientists have found that if you gaze at the color green, it helps people feel more comfortable in their surroundings. And when I used to work for a photo processing firm many years ago, I learned a lot about color and how important it was. And one of the strongest examples was how a hospital had designated murals of natural pictures in their windows. And the difference that it made with the patients was just phenomenal. When they had the examination rooms, they had murals of nature, green, on the ceilings and on the walls. It was just beautifully, artistically done. Patients were calmer. They were very careful about using the color blue because often blue made people feel cold. So this is a fun area to explore. Now, if you want prosperity, think purple. Purple reportedly attracts money to ensure you'll never lack what you truly need. So keep a tall plant in a purple pot to symbolize your finances growing, and that's with feng shui. And scientists say seeing purple stimulates the pituitary gland and boosts problem-solving abilities. Also, it's been associated with intuition. Now, if you want a creativity boost, think white. Why? Because white is seemingly the color of innocence and imagination in feng shui. If you add white to your bedroom environment or artwork framed in white to your walls, it really brings out creativity. Scientists know that white compromises every other color in the visible light spectrum, comprises every other color in the visible light spectrum, so it makes you feel full of possibilities. And if you want more smarts, think blue. Blue inspires greater knowledge and wisdom. Arrange some blue objects anywhere where you're reading or studying to help tap into your natural wisdom, also your intuition. And the color blue seems to jumpstart the intuitive right side of the brain in the studies that they've done with color. Now, if you'd like to have more help in your life, think silver. Silver seems to draw helping hands. According to feng shui, it attracts whatever you need exactly at the time you need it. Hang a shiny wind chime by your door. Use a silver angel figurine to encourage divine assistance. In color association studies, people link silver to reliability. And pink, well, most of us, when we see pink, we think of love. Sensual and passionate without being too aggressive, feng shui designers use accents of pink to improve romantic relationships. Pink roses near your bed or pink candles on a night table. Pink soothing effects are so well documented, it's often used on walls in prisons and in ER rooms in hospitals. And they've been using a particular shade of pink in prisons, in particular rooms for agitated prisoners. And what they found is that when they would put those prisoners who were so agitated in the pink room, they'd calm down very, very quickly. So the color pink is one that has a tremendous effect. And, of course, there's so many other shades and variables. Just remember, with colors, if you will study nature, I had a very wise teacher tell me that many, many years ago. If you look at nature, look at the clarity of color. Watch nature when she's starting to close down like she is now because we're in the fall season of the year. How she closes down and how colors become sort of dull and flat. They get rather blah, almost ugly in some respects because the life force is withdrawing back into the earth so that it can be preparing for the cold of winter that will be coming in a few months. So this is something that nature does, and when you study colors in nature, you'll get a good insight on how colors can serve you in life. Speaking of serving you, I'd be delighted to give you some intuitive insights. Give me a call at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. All I need is your first name or your initial, and I'll tell you what I perceive. Donna Sebo here. We'll be back in just a moment.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Don't forget now, I'm going to be in San Francisco. I'm going to be appearing at the Wisdom Festival, and I will be in a booth 113. I want to be sure to let you know about that, booth 113 at the Wisdom Festival. I'm going to be appearing on the 15th and the 16th. I will be speaking the evening of the 15th. So my topic is going to be mental ecology, and I'd look forward to seeing you there. I hope you're able to come out. Give me a call if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 in the U.S., Canadian, 888-815-9756. Let's go to our first caller today. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
This is Odette, and I'm calling from Ottawa.
All right, dear. Padua, Italy?
I'm sorry?
Where are you? What country?
Canada.
In Canada, Padua. Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood you. Okay,
oh.
You're in Canada, and give me your first name again.
It's Odette. It's spelled O-D-E-T-T-E.
Odette, French.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a beautiful name. All right, Odette, let me tell you what I am perceiving. First of all, you cannot afford to ignore some things that must be paid attention to. It seems to me, this is the imaging I'm getting in my head, I feel like I'm walking through a bunch of blackberry bushes. And you know, blackberry bushes have thorns on them, so you have to move very, very carefully, and it's not always such a good idea to walk through them because they're not fun. But I am seeing you being able to have like a pair of clippers in your hand, and so as you're walking, you're clipping, you're paying attention, but there's a lot of irritations that are going on around you. But if you're methodical and you're patient, you're going to be able to clip those irritations away. But it'll be one step at a time, and you must be attentive. There are a number of individuals that I feel just want to hang on to you. You are a person that really likes to think things through. You enjoy your quiet time. You enjoy it when you can just have your meditation. But you are having what I call a very grounded year. It's as if you must take care of what needs to be taken care of. You cannot ignore it. If you do, it's just going to be irritating you, making so uncomfortable. So you must pay attention to what has to be taken care of. It doesn't mean you need to take on other people's responsibilities, but you must take care of that which needs your attention. Do not ignore it. You'll work things out. So know that though this year has had its prickly situations, once you get through them, you're not going to have to repeat them.
Okay.
So just be attentive. Remember, you've got the clippers in your hand. So you move slowly, you move thoughtfully, and if you find anything trying to stick itself into you, the way blackberry bushes will do, then you just take your clippers, look at what's going on, take care of it, get it out of the way. Clip it and get it out of the way.
Okay.
Very, very important. You'll do beautifully if you do. But it's slow but sure, dear, not real fast. What questions would you like to ask me?
Oh, I didn't know I had a question.
It can be about anybody, anything. It doesn't make any difference.
Okay. What about my therapist?
All right. What about what, dear? Your voice is soft, so it's difficult for me to hear you.
Okay. What about my therapy? I don't know if this is one of the things I should be clipping.
Well, it depends on what your needs are. That's why I'm saying you have to pay attention to what's going on around you. If you are concerned about your therapist or someone that you're working with, mm-hmm. you need to ask yourself why you're concerned.
Okay.
And if you are coming, you need to be attentive to what I would call the facts. If you feel as if this person is not a person you're able to communicate well with, as if mm-hmm. there is a boundary that is in place, and this is not the person you feel can serve you well in future things, that's all right. You have the right to make that choice.
Right.
If you need someone that you can communicate with, then you need to find someone different. That's okay, too.
Okay.
The choice is yours. Remember, though, that you want to think it through. You want to have integrity with yourself. And it's not because you're afraid of the person or anything like this, because fear often undermines us in so many subtle ways. It's just what we have to learn as people to deal with. So if you are let's say you've gotten to a certain point and you feel as if someone just isn't the person for you to work with, it's okay. Go ahead and look for someone else.
Okay. That's good.
But this has been a tough year for you. This has been a tough year for you. Lots of things that you have dealt with, but I congratulate you because you are willing to work with them. And that's something sometimes people aren't willing to do, but you are. Just take it slow but sure.
Yeah, I think I've grown a lot this year, too, so.
And that's important.
Yeah. Can I ask a question about my daughter? Like, do you see anything for my daughter?
Give me your daughter's first name.
Chantal.
Spell that for me.
C-H-A-N-T-A-L.
What a pretty name, Chantal. Chantal is an individual that I think is going to be a little bit frazzled. It's very easy for her to get overwhelmed because she takes on what I would describe as frivolous stuff. And she is very intense. She is a person that really wants to make a difference. And I think Chantal needs to be aware of where she wants to put herself. How old is she?
20.
She's 20. Is she going to be going on to college, university?
Yes.
Wonderful. Tell her to be patient with herself because she needs to have an understanding that the international application for education is going to be very, very valuable for her.
Okay.
So there's a lot that she's trying to figure out, and she's having an anxious moment or two about it. But if she's conscientious and is aware that she's going to have an international positioning with what eventually she does, I think that will help her make some choices.
Okay.
And I want to thank you for your call.
Thank you.
You're welcome. This is Donna Siebel, and my goodness, we are out of time here. Oh, I forgot to tell you, we are going to be having tomorrow a best of Donna because I have a prior commitment, so I'm not going to be able to be on the air with you live. But next week, wow, we've got a great lineup. We've got Cosmic Ordering, Ghosts of St. Louis, Eating Clean, 10 Laws of Wealth and Abundance, and oh, so much more. Know always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. The world truly is here for you to enjoy its abundance. Don't be afraid to open up your hands, your heart, and your spirit to receive it. God bless. Talk to you on Monday. Don't forget Best of Donna tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.